I'm very happy to be joined on the phone by Fred Hochberg. Mr. Hochberg is the former president and chairman of the Export-Import Bank of the United States under the Obama administration. Mr. Hochberg, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Good to be with you, Rick.
I should say that we met for coffee a couple of weeks ago and talked and just had a very good conversation about, you know, the state of trade in the United States, the state of trade with Republicans. And I thought it'd be a good idea to have you on the program because, one, just in its very basic way, you know, we hear about the Export-Import Bank, but I don't think most people really know what that bank is.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. It is a bit of a misnomer. Although we've been around since the 1930s, so maybe we have to do a better job of communicating. And there are also about 90 export-import banks around the world. Most of the developed world and developing world all have an export-import bank, primarily to make sure that the exports they produce are able to get the financing to be sold overseas. And I think there's a realization that exports are what drive one of the drivers of job growth, so that's a real reason behind it.
And, you know, I have to admit, I wasn't that aware of it either until all of a sudden, and this was a couple of years ago, and the Republican National Committee was holding a summer meeting in Chicago, and they were going over, you know, party platform materials, and all of a sudden a debate erupted over whether there should be a reauthorization of the Export-Import Bank. And I thought it was kind of an interesting debate because helping business, helping to grow U.S. markets overseas, you know, tended to be just an assumption. And now that's kind of changed on its head.
Right. Well, I think that, you know, Republicans have frequently been seen as the party of business, the party of big business. I think, frankly, the financial crisis, TARP, the bailout of the banks, changed the whole complexion of that. I mean, the Republican Party got very nervous. Their base was angry about that, and they really pulled back in large part from that sort of total and complete support of the business community. That said, you know, the Export-Import Bank, one of the unique things about it, we often hear this, but they're not that many. It's a sunset agency, which means depending every 3, 4, 5, even 6 years, the bank's authority to make loans and do the work it does is up for renewal. This started in the 1930s, and for the first, good Lord, 75 years, it was a voice vote. You know, all those in favor say aye, any opposed, no, the ayes have it. So because the bank has that kind of renewal aspect to it, we became an easy target for some Republicans, and it was a minority of Republicans, but they were influential to block the bank and to have a lapse in authority.
Well, and I should point out that Mr. Hochberg's here in Chicago visiting fellow with the Institute of Politics, David Axelrod's Institute of Politics out at the University of Chicago. And one of the things he's talking about, and it was kind of ironic because he already came up with the title of it, even though I described it too, is, you know, when did trade become a dirty word?
Right. Well, I think what the root of this is that we have had an income problem in the United States for the last 20, 30 years. We don't really have a jobs problem. We're almost at full employment. But what we have had is middle-class wages, notwithstanding productivity gains in the manufacturing side, have not seen any real wage growth. And so people aren't feeling good. They aren't feeling optimistic. They aren't feeling that their lives are getting better. And so that has turned a lot of the mood anti-trade. It's hard to be anti-automation, anti-innovation, but it's much easier to personalize trade as being foreign things coming into our country. So I think that's exacerbated it.
So when you look at things like, and we've talked about this before on the program, about things like automation, digitalization, globalization, almost in a way that you know, immigration has become a hot button issue, is that, you know, where the issue of job growth, job loss, job strength, the strength of the economy, the uncertainty in the economy, you know, is on a, based on a multitude of issues, but it becomes easier to deflect to one thing or another.
That's right. I think we should probably tell listeners exactly what Export-Import Bank does, because it's probably not that clear. If I could take a minute, there's a company I went to visit, Howe Industries. They make ice-making equipment. Mary Howe is, I think, the fourth generation as the CEO, and they make the kind of ice that is equipment that's sold on to fishing boats that you'll see in Whole Foods and the fish counter. It's a specialized ice-making equipment, much colder than what you get in your home refrigerator. And it's a small business, and it's exporting. And during the financial crisis, they had to export more. Maybe 40% of sales are exported. So we made sure that they had working capital. We made sure they also could sell overseas on open account, and we would insure their receivables for a fee. So that was a way, and Mary's company is one of 90% of the companies that EXIM works with are small businesses that have difficulty getting the financing so that they can enter global markets. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you have companies like Boeing or Caterpillar that are competing with their competitors in Germany and China and Japan and need to make sure they have a financing package that their buyer can buy the goods, buy an Airbus plane versus buying a Boeing plane versus an Airbus plane, and EXIM will, for a fee, provide a guarantee to a bank to make that loan so that Ethiopian Airways, for example, can buy Boeing and not just an Airbus plane because they offer financing. So it levels the playing field for large companies and small, and I should add, small businesses make about 90% of what the Export-Import Bank does.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, speaking with Fred Hochberg. He's former president and chairman of the Export-Import Bank of the United States. We're talking about issues of trade and what's going on coming out of the Trump administration. And Mr. Hochberg, one thing I was curious about, and you know, issues like NAFTA came up during the president's successful campaign, and the Trans-Pacific Partnership provisions for trade there. So that's gone. NAFTA, we're being told, well, we need to renegotiate it. What are we talking about here?
Well, NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, was negotiated in the early 90s, 93, 94. Just to give you some perspective, there were about 12 free trade agreements in the world in the early 90s, and we were ahead of the curve. Today, there are over 600. So at one point, we were ahead of the curve. We're now somewhat behind. And I would say that a trade has a more negative appeal in this country than in many other countries.
I don't mean to interrupt, but is that because of kind of the protectionist rhetoric that comes from the presidency?
Well, there's a lot of protectionist rhetoric. You know, I think also I don't think the political class has been honest with Americans. When you have a trade agreement, they're going to be winners and losers. It's just as simple as that. And we've kind of always said it'll help everybody, but frankly, there are losers. You know, some products that now have competition from imports, textiles are a great example. It's hard to buy an American-made article of clothing or sneakers that did put a number of workers out of work at some point in the 90s and early 2000s. So there are winners and losers. I think we have to be more honest about that. Also, I think we have to stop fighting yesterday's wars. You know, that's the problem generals often have to deal with. The wars that they're fighting today are not the same that they fought 20 and 30 years ago. Some of the problems on trade and NAFTA have really moved to the sidelines. In other words, today, as we talked, Rick, it's automation, it's technology, it's innovation that is much more an impact on the fate of workers, their wages, and the number of jobs than trade at this point. So I think, one, we got to realize what it is. As we said earlier, it's easy to personify trade, but frankly, that's not the real culprit for what's ailing American workers today. Back to NAFTA. This is a very tricky negotiation. Again, yes, it needs to be modernized, but after 20-odd years, you're going to have winners and losers. Because guess what? The Canadians and the Mexicans, they also want something. They also would like something out of this deal. And we're not going to be able to call the shots the way we could. Maybe, frankly, 40, 50 years ago, we could call the shots on a lot of things. We can't call the shots anymore.
Well, and so we've got that coming up with the renegotiation such as it is. But, you know, we've also had Trump saying, well, we'll just pull out of it.
Right. Pulling out of NAFTA would be so disruptive to the U.S. economy. I mean, let's remember, $1.2 trillion of trade goes between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. Those are our two largest trading partners. Those are the two largest destinations for exports in the United States. Here in Illinois, agriculture is a key beneficiary of that, of the NAFTA agreement, and a lot of that comes in jeopardy. So the kind of uncertainty and chaos that would result from this is very hard to calculate, but it would be enormous.
Well, thank you for bringing up Illinois, because I was going to point out that there is a special relevance when it comes to exports in Illinois. And frankly, it's not necessarily something that folks here in the Chicago area would know, but in
agriculture, there's not that much farming going on in Chicago.
No, that's for sure. But the folks out in the rural parts of the state, they know it. They know how important exports are for their economies.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, our ag community, we're one of the largest. It's unusual to have a developed country like the United States also be a giant agricultural exporter, but we are. We have a very vibrant and strong ag sector, and it has benefited from NAFTA. So we need to be very careful before we start adjusting these things, because there could be huge consequences. When I was down in Colombia years ago, before the Colombia trade agreement, the Colombians said, listen, we prefer American wheat, but without a free trade agreement, we're going to buy from Canada, where they had an agreement, or Argentina. So these commodity prices are very price sensitive. So if we don't have free trade going back and forth, we will jeopardize many farm incomes.
I was going to ask you, too, I mentioned the TPP, and we've got the president's heading over to Asia for some meetings over there, but the fact of having pulled out of that Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, what does that mean for the United States?
It means that we are handing a lot of commerce and diplomatic engagement right to China. TPP wasn't perfect, but my goodness, we had President Obama, who he and his team negotiated it. He cared about workers first. He did not care about big business. And if that agreement wasn't good enough, I don't know what will be. It wasn't perfect. No agreement's perfect. But what we have done is enabled China to increase its role in Asia. China has two policies that are very threatening to American interests. One is called One Belt, One Road, where they're doing investment, exporting, diplomacy, and also something called China 2025, which is trying to manufacture almost everything China needs within China. And we have made that much easier for them by pulling out of TPP.
Well, and even taking that beyond about concerns about, you know, basically, let's look at what's going on with the United States in this new administration, and you have foreign countries going, can the U.S. be counted upon, and who are they looking at? But one of those places is looking at China.
That's right. That's right. But we've just added so much unpredictability to our trading partners and to our diplomatic partners that it becomes very difficult. I mean, you know, we had no better relationship in the world than people like Canada and, in many ways, Mexico, and we have in Australia, and we sort of got out of our way to insult them.
Well, how does trade play into, we got the midterms coming up in 2018, we detect any change in what's going on?
Well, I think obviously we need to get NAFTA, if it's going to be renegotiated, there is great concern because we a couple of deadlines right around the horizon, Rick. One is our midterm elections. Two, on July 1st, there are the Mexican presidential elections. And we have something in the United States called Trade Promotion Authority. It used to be called Fast Track.
Right.
And what that means is that Congress can vote up or down on any change of NAFTA. They can't start renegotiating paragraph by paragraph. And this is to make sure that when the United States is negotiating overseas, that our partners understand that that's the deal, and it'll be approved or declined, but will not be changed. That also expires this summer. So there are a lot of deadlines looming, and it is very quick to try and renegotiate a deal of that complexity. It started in late August, and they now want to complete it by March. That is a very, very ambitious timetable. If I can add one more thing, I mean, one of the things that the United States has been pushing is a five-year sunset clause in the NAFTA agreement. Having run an agency with a sunset clause, that is a really bad idea.
And just making that automatically up for renewal.
Yes, because that's just ripe for the fact that it will not get renewed or will be so unpredictable, companies will not invest because they don't know what the predictability is.
So amidst all of this with NAFTA, we've got also Fast Track Authority. That's a lot on the plate.
You know, governing is complicated. Not like campaigning. It's complicated to govern.
Well, Fred Hochberg, former president and chairman of the Export-Import Bank of the United States. Fred, thanks so much for getting up with me this morning. I truly appreciate it and look forward to talking to you again while you're still in Chicago.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Rick. I really enjoyed it.